From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the last Friday in April 2024. Checking the calendar, the Buck Series with Indiana continues today and Sunday in Indianapolis. Brewers are at home at AmFam this weekend with the New York Yankees. The Tina Turner musical is happening this Sunday at Eline Hall. And now for something a little different. Drone racing at the Pedderlite Center this weekend. How cool is that? Let's start with some shocking news. George Santos, the embarrassed and embarrassing ex-New York congressman, ends his bid for Congress after raising $0 for his income for his comeback campaign. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, well, you know the rest. Health officials are asking people not to catch a snake if they've been bitten. A doctor said he didn't need to see the snake for the treatment. This isn't show and tell. My guess is this guy's been bitten a few times. This is kind of embarrassing. For the firefighters in Concord, North Carolina, a reserve ladder truck caught fire inside of a Concord fire station number 8. And finally, a Belgian man got arrested for drunk driving but was acquitted because his body makes its own booze. Stop me if you've heard this before. Three separate doctors say it doesn't, in fact, have to be anything but auto-ruri syndrome, which I've never heard of. It's a rare condition in which the human body produces alcohol. It's also known as gut fermentation syndrome. That's when the gut produces ethanol. Man, free booze and free gas. Some guys have all the luck. All right, on the podcast today, we have Joel Dreesing, Mike Helzel, Steve Giles, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max, and a great week overall. The NASDAQ up a pretty stellar 4.2% after what had been a rough stretch. The S&P 500 up 2.7%, closing today back at 5,100 after finishing last week at 4,967. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.7%. Again, a pretty strong week overall. The indexes for the year, the NASDAQ up 6.3, the S&P 500 up 7.3, and the Dow up 2. You know, Steve, perhaps a good lesson this week that even missing a couple of days can be pretty detrimental to the long-term success of your portfolio. I know I can count on you to extol the virtues of balance, and I think this is another great week, another reminder that even amidst some uncertainty, and we had plenty of it and plenty to talk about, you know, maybe a good reminder that just staying the course is often the right way to go.
Yeah, it's not timing the market, Kyle, so much as it's time in the market. And for those of you that wanted to make a knee-jerk reaction after yesterday's sell-off because the market went down, would have made a huge mistake because of the recovery we saw today. Again, take a step back, look at how those changes might impact your longer-term goals. And take a deep breath if you're worried that what's going on in the market is going to be longer term or maybe just short-lived in a flash in the pan.
And what I think is so interesting, Mike, is, you know, we're in an environment in which really for the last year and a half, almost going on 2 years now, it made sense to play offense, right? It made sense to buy those stocks, let your balances run up. We got an email that I shared with you today from one of our investment partners that looked at this year's NFL draft and pointed out it's the first time ever that there wasn't a defensive player drafted in those top 15 picks. And I think it's maybe appropriate as we look at our portfolios to remember that there's a reason why you play both sides of the ball in football. We also play both sides of the ball for our portfolios.
Yeah, it's interesting. The past, the first few months of this year, you guys might have had the same thing. You got a lot of clients coming in with the market doing well, like, should we go all in? I mean, let's add to stocks. This is a great time to add to stocks. And then it gets to all-time highs. And they say, well, we should still add to stocks, but maybe. And people just are, you know, they got FOMO. They're fear of missing out and market's going up. You always have to tell them, stocks can go down too. Even in the middle of when it's, you know, what do we have, like 21 or 23 weeks or something like that where the market was up, you still need those bonds because, as you astutely put, Kyle, defense still wins championships, right? And you look at bonds as defense for your portfolio, where when you have down days like we had a couple of them. Bonds rallied a little bit. You look at the last 2 months of last year, of 23, stocks were ripping all year long. Bonds were doing okay. In the last 2 months, bonds did fantastic for clients, right? So it's not always the shiny new toy, you know, it comes to stocks that are going to make money for you. Sometimes, as you like to say, you got to eat your vegetables too, and bonds are your vegetables, bonds are your defense, bonds are your boring part of your portfolio, but they're an important part of your portfolio that if you just abandon them, I can talk because it's Friday, you're going to miss out.
Yeah, Mike, I know we can count on you for the sports analogies.
And always.
I think when I saw that email, it was an obvious one to toss your way. But
if you want my thoughts for rounds 2 and 3 of the NFL draft tonight, stick around after the podcast, everyone.
But I think, of course, that you know your point about, yeah, sometimes stocks can go up and bonds can go up and vice versa. It's a reminder that sometimes they both can go down. And we had a stretch recently where we were seeing both things move in tandem, in part because of higher inflationary pressures, in part, I think, just because of uncertainty overall. And then, you know, we started to see some economic data that was maybe showing a little more weakness. And Joel, we got a report on gross domestic product this week. You know, again, the measure of kind of all the goods and services produced here in our country. And signs that perhaps the slowing that the Fed is hoping for has taken hold, even if it hasn't immediately translated on the inflation front.
Right, yeah. So the Fed's raised interest rates. I can talk too, Mike. they raised interest rates to slow down the economy so that the rate of inflation would slow. And that had been working for a while. And the economy, as this report shows, is slowing down. But the inflation rates are stalling. They were a little bit more, actually, than the last time they measured them, and they're still above the Fed's long-term target. And yet the economy slowed down. It slowed down at an annual pace of 1.6% in the first 3 months of this year, compared to 3.4% the quarter before that, the last quarter of 2023, and that's that 1.6% is the slowest pace since we had two negative quarters to begin 2022.
And I think, you know, the key is always what's causing that slowdown. And the challenge now is that if 70% of our economy is consumer spending, well, one of the big pieces that's taken a step back is that consumer spending, but Joel, maybe not across the board.
Right, yeah. And the interesting thing about that GDP report is that it's the first of three reports. So it's a preliminary estimate. So you think about the first 3 months of the year were January, February, March. But today, the same unit of the government reported some of the same numbers, but for the month of March. So there's greater detail there, and it's more recent. And in that report, actually, consumer spending was more robust than it looked compared to the three-month preliminary report that we had. And in the report today, the consumer spending was kind of evenly divided between goods and services. In the three-month report, it looked more like it was more heavily skewed to services, and they were losing out on things like automobiles and gasoline as far as goods.
Joel, but I don't think that you can talk about the spending numbers without bringing up the savings rate. Americans are addicted to buying things. I mean, it is what drives our economy forward. We're consumers. We do it better than any other country. But what's kept consumers spending has meant that their savings rate continues to go down.
Right, yeah. So in the month of March, the savings rate went down to 3.2% of disposable income. That compares to 7.2% when we were entering the pandemic. And then if you go back way to 1959, which is when the government first started recording those numbers, it's 8.5% saving.
Yeah, you know, economists refer to that as the saver's paradox, right? In order for the economy to grow, they tell us to spend. But then out of the other side of their mouths, they're like, well, if you want to retire, you better save. So how do you reconcile the need to save for the longer term while at the same time the need to spend in the short term.
Right, yeah, the economy relies on that consumer spending. It drives two-thirds of our business activity. And I've been reading more economists saying that a lot of that spending that's keeping the economy going is probably from older, wealthier people, people who have fixed mortgage rates on their houses and they're not moving soon, so
houses paid off.
Yeah, and these higher interest rates aren't affecting them as much. Whereas the savers, the younger, lower income earners are suffering from the higher interest rates.
And I think, as we've pointed out on this podcast, we have more of those older, nearing or at retiree workers now than we've had in a very long time, just given the demographics of our country. And so in many ways, that's a bit of a kind of bottom on how far things can go. Because, yeah, the savings rate might dip a little because of higher spending. But at the end of the day, if more of our consumers are consumers whose houses are paid off or who have the home they're going to be in for the next 20 or 30 years and are paying 3.25% on a 30-year mortgage instead of the new 7% on a 30-year mortgage, well, they're a lot less impacted by the interest rate conversation.
The need to save is diminished.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, they know where their spending's coming from. It's not tied to employment anymore. It's tied to, how's my portfolio doing? Well, let's take a look at our first quarter statement and see our portfolios are looking great. It's tied to, am I getting my Social Security checks and how have those reacted to cost of living adjustments? We got a nice bump up in cost of living the last time around. And so I think when you look at the primary drivers of spending in our economy, they're more stable today than they were 15 or 20 years ago. And it means that, yeah, you're going to see ebbs and flows. And, I think the first quarter GDP number is a good example of, yeah, it's going to slow down at points in time. It'll speed up at points in time. But there is a backstop to kind of the longer-term concerns or the bigger concerns about what happens if corporations get nervous and start laying off. Well, fewer people are in the workforce now because they've entered that retirement phase. And so I think that's part of the conversation here as well. Joel, you had a longtime nemesis that you shared with me from your old reporter days. By the name of Robert Frick, he's an economist now for Navy Federal Credit Union, and he shared a quote about that first quarter GDP, which I think is quite appropriate, and maybe a reminder that we're still the early days of looking at that data. But specifically, he pointed out that first quarter GDP data are often squirrely and heavily revised. And I think that sometimes catches people by surprise, right? This idea
that an economist has a word like squirrely in his vocabulary.
Or a sense of humor, or yeah. But no, this idea that the data is great, but it isn't complete. And even a month from now, 3 months from now, we're not going to have complete information on the first quarter. We're going to make those revisions over time. And to your point, maybe that March information is a little more of a clear picture of what's actually happening now than what we saw in what maybe was a weaker January and February.
And like the GDP report, though, the report today shows an economy that continues to grow at a slower pace, but that has inflation that's sort of sticking right now.
And, you look at some of the other data we got this week on home sales or consumer sentiment, I think all pointing to more of the same conversation here, that interest rates matter, that the inflation conversation is still hanging out there. Consumers still feeling okay, if not as great as they were, maybe a month ago.
And I think the key is that, with inflation not going down as fast as it had been, it was 7.1% in mid-2022. It's at 3.4% or however you measure it, maybe 2.7%. It's still above the 2% Fed target, but it hasn't moved much in the last year or so. And the concern there is that that's going to discourage the Fed from lowering those interest rates that it raised, and that's going to affect things like mortgages. And so we had the National Association of Realtors this month come out with its forecast for home sales this year and figured that sales were going to be going up like 9% this year as in lower mortgage rates encourage more people to move into different houses.
You know, Mike, we're in the middle of earnings season now. About half the companies have reported. The other half to go here for the S&P 500. And, you know, when you look at forward earnings multiples on the S&P, it's fair to say we're a little above average long term. But one of the things that helps us to kind of stomach maybe a little bit higher valuation on the S&P is some stronger forecasts for earnings going ahead. You know, you look at the first quarter, not all that great, but potentially as we get later into the year, some signs that maybe the earnings forecasters are starting to see things picking up.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the earnings part is everyone was waiting for the big tech companies this week. And it's just funny, on three different sites after Meta reported, you see the Zuckerberg headline, "We're losing money." You can take anything, but yeah, out of context, but you're losing money. And so they're slowing down. I mean, the tech companies were ripping for quite a long time, and now they're slowing down a little bit. But as you said, it looks to be accelerating towards the end of the year, which is, I mean, I tell clients this all the time. This isn't linear, right? You're going to have, like you said, ebbs and flows. And so, yeah, even though the tech companies may not have reported, you know, had the best reporting numbers they've had, you could still bank on them, I think, to do well and you kind of grow towards the end of the year. But also, the interesting part, what you're seeing with, again, the ebbs and flows is, go back to GDP and the Q3 and Q4, great numbers. This one wasn't that great. Same with earnings. They were doing great, and now they slowed down. But we all kind of see that coming, right? Because it can't, those numbers can't go into perpetuity forever. You're going to get slowdown. So when you get this, it's just a chance to reset and not completely panic, as we've kind of discussed earlier in the pod.
And I think a bit of an acceleration in earnings later this year, next year, would be welcome. Certainly help support some of the prices where they are, but it isn't necessary to see the growth that maybe is forecast tomorrow, right? That if we're long-term in our thinking, yeah, great, tech companies have slowed down a little recently, but still some great prospects for earnings there. You know, maybe you believe in Facebook or the Meta, the parent company of Facebook, or maybe you don't. But if you cast a wide enough net, there's a lot of great businesses out there. And beyond just next quarter, next year's earnings, I think there's some pretty meaningful opportunity. You know, Joel, we have a newsletter coming out this afternoon. I think a really good opportunity for our listeners to potentially hear a little more or read a little more, rather, on some of the things that are on our minds right now. You know, anything in particular from kind of this latest round that catches your eye that's going out this afternoon?
Well, a week ago, we discussed a question that one of our podcast listeners had for us, and you expanded on that in the newsletter, and I think that was helpful. And as usual, our articles have links to other resources, so you can go even deeper when you're reading these things. I had a piece that was kind of inspired by myself, I mean, for myself personally, when I was seeing all of the concerns about the presidential candidates and their advanced ages and what that does to one's cognitive abilities. And so I was kind of exploring some of those questions, because we know from research that one of the first things to go when your mind, you know, loses cognitive abilities, which most of ours do as we age, is that we lose some of our abilities to manage money. So I think that's something that everybody should pay attention to and, you know, set things up around them, not only to measure themselves, but to have, you know, some security for yourself and the rest of your family.
And I think as we age, also potentially more vulnerable to security concerns, more vulnerable to potential surrendering of financial assets or resources to maybe bad actors, right? People that are trying to take advantage of us, our data. And that's something I know that we try to get into every one of these newsletters, is a reminder on some of that for our clients. I know it's also a conversation I have with clients every time they're in the office, every time I'm on the phone with them, just reminding them that we want to help them look out for themselves. And so pointing to the newsletter is a great resource for, hey, we got a ton of material that we keep in there on some of the risks that are out there right now. And we, again, touched on one of those risks this time around.
Yeah, it's one where, you know, there's this old thing where people will call up an unsuspecting consumer and say, you know, hey, grandma, I'm in jail, or I'm, you know, I'm stuck in this country and I need some money from you right now and don't tell anybody. And then they give them some weird way of sending them the money. Well, now with artificial intelligence, there are more of those bad actors who are recording people's voices and using those recordings to actually make it sound like it is your grandson or granddaughter calling you and asking for that money. So it becomes even more convincing. But again, you have to look at what they're doing and what they're asking for and step back and take a breath and don't panic.
Yeah, buy yourself some time, right? Make sure that what you're doing is what you actually want to be doing, and don't be rushed into making decisions that maybe aren't appropriate. I know this one personally. My very grandma had a phone call many, many years ago now from someone pretending to be me, saying that I was in jail in Mexico, which is maybe not quite what you would expect from me, but...
What'd you do?
You never know.
But, you know, my grandmother and grandfather at the time were like, well, maybe it is Kyle, and maybe we should see if we can help. Now, my grandma and grandpa knew better than to send money, but I could just as easily see somebody else in another situation say, hey, maybe we should send that $5,000 to get him out of jail in Mexico, and we'll sort it all out when they get back.
Have a doubt and check it out.
Well, on a somewhat similar note, I think it is important as investors get into those later stages that they share with their loved ones where their money is. What is their investment plan? What is their estate plan? Where is the money? Because... it will only help with the closing out of those accounts when you know, you're not around anymore. Right. And I've had it happen more than once where beneficiaries of clients will call me and say they just got a notice that a CD came due that grandma opened up 7 years ago, right? And if they had just been open with where their assets were, and I think it's part of it's generational. I grew up in a household where my dad never, ever, ever, ever talked about what he made. He never, ever talked about how much money he had invested. And so I think part of it is generational. But share your wishes with your beneficiaries and your loved ones so that they know, so that nothing isn't missed or forgotten about.
And it helps, Steve, it helps guard against the fraud we were just talking about.
Absolutely.
But it also helps guard against the cognitive decline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing how well all these conversations fit together. And I know we touch on these a lot, but I do think it's a critical part of what we do, that we help our clients, our listeners, our readers navigate what's a pretty challenging world at times from a security perspective, from a protecting our financial well-being perspective. You know, it's just one more thing that I think we're here to educate on. With that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.